It's Haley Brownlow Winslow, live and back for round two of Brownlow's Blues. Today we're talking about the history of the club, something, as an American, I don't claim to be an expert in. But I have the right people in the studio with me who do, here to give a behind-the-scenes look at how the Blues have blossomed over the years. We'll get to them in just a minute, but first, as I was starting the second blog a couple days ago, sitting at the desk I share with club historian Tony the Beast DiBolfo, a navy blue book called The Carlton Story caught my eye. So as I reached for it, accidentally knocking over a couple 250th game Cade Simpson paper statues and DiBolfo's Dell Italia All-Australia DVD, I opened right to the oldest known photograph of a Carlton football team. It was taken before a match at Royal Park in 1868, the fifth year of the club's existence and only 34 years after the foundation of Melbourne. Although blurred and battered and in black and white, the caption reveals Carlton's very first uniform, merely an orange cap with a blue band. So, flipping back to the first page painted a more colorful picture of how it all began, with teams recruiting players through newspaper advertisements, or advertisements, as Australians call them. One ad in particular read, "All those interested, turn up at the Richmond Paddock, now called Yarra Park, on a certain Sunday afternoon for a game of football." The book says this particular article also reported a mixed crowd assembled, but they were a slashing lot generally. They included Englishmen, Irishmen, and Scotsmen who had been drawn to Victoria in search of wealth, and a number of athletic native-born Victorians. The Englishmen followed the rules of rugby, and the Irishmen, Scotsmen, and Australians played, well, go as you please. Games were little more than a feast rough and tumble, it says, with more emphasis on brawn and barrel chests than skill, and boundaries so sketchy spectators sometimes spilled onto the playing area. Through what might be called the dark ages of the sport, and what likely saved it in ravenous rivalry between Carlton and early Melbourne teams, Carlton pioneered. The book credits Carlton with founding the coaching system that we know today with the appointment of the first coach, Jack Worrell, who molded the first team of specialists the league has known. A champion team, he called it, as opposed to a team of champions. It says Carlton, more so than any other league, fashioned the tactical measures to hold and master that telling loose man short game passing game of Collingwood, a power in the league from the 1900s. But it was what I found folded up inside that front cover of this 1958 book by Hugh Buggy and Harry Bell that made it all click for me. On a wrinkly sheet of sheer white paper was an invitation to Carlton great Newton Chandler's 100th birthday party. This Hall of Fame occasion that was celebrated back in September 19th, 1993, to me is what Australian rules football is all about. Camaraderie, tradition, legacy. And over the years and through the thick and thin of it, it's what Carlton continues to pride itself on, most recently represented in our Bound by Blue mantra. But to veer off from reading what you can read for yourself in this or another book, or a quick Google or Wikipedia search, I want to talk about what people don't know about the club and get right down to the heart of it. So that's why I have with me two Carlton legacies, football administration manager Shane O'Sullivan and head of football Andrew McKay. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
And thanks, Ali. Thanks for having us.
For those who don't know anything about your background, can you guys just briefly give us a little bit of information about where you come from in the club?
Yeah, my connection with Carlton goes back to 1993. I was drafted by Carlton then in the 92 draft. I'm from Adelaide, South Australia. So I had 11 years playing here, then went off and I studied as a vet while I was playing and graduated and went off and worked as a vet for 9 years and did a bit of work for the Match Review Panel and Laws of the Game at the AFL, and then found myself back in this role 4.5 years ago.
That's Andrew, and then Shane?
Well, I started back in 1979, which is a long time ago, and it was a great year to start when Carlton won a premiership under Alex Jezelenko. And then, amazing, after winning a premiership at the annual general meeting, there was a big upheaval, and George Harris, who was the then president, and Jezza and that wanted to go one direction, and the club wanted to go in another, and both left. And we had Ian Rice come on as president in 1980, and Perse Jones as coach. So, and then David Parkin come in 1981, which was just an amazing experience for someone young like myself who just loved footy and wanted to be a VFL footballer but wasn't good enough, and to be a part of 81-82 premiership with David and make it 3 out of 4 years was an amazing time to start at this level. Then I went off and was the general manager at Footscray for 6 years, and then went and started the Brisbane Bears, and then I've been back at Carlton since 1994.
So you both left and came back. Well, the grass greener.
there's nothing like being at the Blues. Even tough times, it's still an amazing place to be around.
I think, as far as I'm concerned, obviously being a player here, most of the time when you leave a club as a player, you just need a bit of breathing space, mm-hmm. either from the club or from football generally. And that's what I needed to clear my head and just get away from football for a while. But it has that uncanny knack of dragging you back in, and it certainly got me again and dragged me back in, and I've been loving it ever since.
Do you miss being a vet?
I miss parts of it, yeah, definitely miss parts of it. I really like the surgery part of it. I miss doing that, but some of the clients I don't miss. But no, I'm obviously an animal lover, and we get that fixed through our own animals, but and my friends' animals. I seem to work on them a little bit still, but I've got an interest in a clinic, and very hands off. But I do miss a bit. But you know what? I haven't had too much time to think about. It's been pretty busy here the last 4.5 years.
No kidding, especially this season. All right, Shane, take me back to what it was like here at Carlton when you first started. Who were the hot shots? What was it like in that locker room gearing up for a big game? Paint kind of a picture for us if you can.
Oh, look, yeah, it was an amazing time. The Heatley stand back in those days was just an amazing, and I'm pretty sure Macca would agree, it was sort of had some sort of mystique about it, you know, that sort of stand and the locker rooms. You'd walk down the hallway and, you know, sort of photos of all the past champions. But, when you people like Jezalenko at the club and Mike Fitzpatrick, you know, Wayne Johnson, Mark McClure, we probably had one of the best small brigade in probably history of footy, really, with Ashman, Marku and Buckley and Sheldon. And there was a player up at Bendigo that eventually found his way here, Greg Williams, who we couldn't sort of get him. I used to go up and watch him train for a couple of pre-seasons, and he ended up at Geelong and Sydney and then here. But Carlton had this attitude that, you know, they didn't lose many games, and if we did, there was a big inquiry why we lost on the Monday. So, I know Jezza used to say at three-quarter time, if we're behind at any time, he'd say, well, boys, looks like Monday, we're training until 10 o'clock at night. So that certainly got them to change their attitude, and they'd sort of, you know, most of the time always won. But, yeah, the atmosphere was great. The social club in those days was a big part of the club. You know, all the players would go up after the game. And in those days too, you'd have an aftermatch, and no women were allowed. So we've come a long way.
Wow.
So they used to have to wait outside. So that's what it was like back in those days. And the two teams would get together, and the umpires and the girls would have to wait outside.
Times have changed, Shane. It's interesting. We've just put in a bid for our own women's team. So that's a sign of the times. So playing at Princess Park here, even not that long ago, around that mid-90s period, I liken it a little bit to what Adelaide Oval is now. We made it our own. We were quite successful through that period. And from what I can gather, other teams hated playing us here because we grew another leg. And I think Adelaide and Port Adelaide are finding that over in South Australia. It's a pretty hostile crowd to go and support another team. And that's certainly what opposition fans were treated to here. So it was a real cauldron of navy blue, wasn't it, Shane?
Oh, it was amazing. And I remember the first day I walked in here, my first game, we played Geelong here, and just couldn't believe, you know, how lucky I was to be working. And the atmosphere, as Macca said, you know, I can still, you know, in those days had the race, and they'd have to pull the fence along to shut the gate so people couldn't walk through until the players all come up from the race or ran down the race. But wherever you were, you could get a good view of the game, and it was always chock-a-block. And as I said, when we're kicking to the Heatley stand, the sort of members really sort of, and Carlton going well, it really sort of was, the place was a buzz.
What was it like for you playing, going out on that oval and now having to be on the other side of it, watching the games?
Yeah, it's completely different. You felt as though you had more control, obviously, when you were playing. I don't feel as though I've got any control on how the boys go. Now, I leave that up to the coaches. I was quite lucky. In 93, when I started, we had a pretty good team, and we got to the grand final and lost. 94, we finished minor premiers and got knocked out in straight sets. the first two finals. We should have gone a lot better than what we did then. Then 95 won the premiership. So here I was. Although I came over a little bit later, I was 22 when I came over, but I was thinking, gee, how easy is this game of footy? It's easy stuff, this AFL thing. And then we had played again in the grand final in 99 and were thereabouts in 2000. Then after that, it was got quite lean, and by the end of my career in 2002, 2003, we found ourselves way down the other end of the ladder and on the bottom, and that was the first time Carlton had actually won the Wooden Spoon in 2002, I think, Shane.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
And so that was a whole new experience, and a different experience, an experience I don't like to remember. So I had the highs and the lows while I was playing.
It definitely sounds like it's been a roller coaster for Carlton. What would you say has been the toughest time?
I think when we lost our draft picks, was pretty tough time. When we got caught with the salary cap debacle, we just appointed Dennis Pagan as coach at the time, and I can remember saying that the then general manager, Don Hanley, does Dennis know we're going to lose our draft picks? He said, no, I haven't told him yet. So that was a pretty difficult time, and to sort of 1 minute think you're going to have the first two picks in the draft, then we'll sort of had our first pick at 45, but just really knocked the. Well, I think we're just starting to get out of it now, financially and player-wise, it really, really knocked the club about. And, I don't think Carlton were used to sort of not being winners, so it's really sort of been a hard grind.
It was the perfect storm, wasn't it, Shane? We finished down the bottom, and when you finish down the bottom, obviously the AFL's equalisation scheme is you get the first pick in the national draft.
Yeah.
We finished down the bottom, and then we got penalised.
Mm.
So we missed out on some really good quality players that would have actually helped us get better, but we weren't allowed to choose the good players. I think we got pick 48 or 50 or something, wasn't it?
Pick 45.
Pick 45, and obviously got fined $1 million, which is an awful lot of money back then. I don't think the AFL realised how hard they hit us.
Yeah.
If you were mid-table, mid-ladder, then it wouldn't have been as hard a hit. But we were right down the bottom, so it kept us down there for quite some time.
Mm. I mean, we lost players like Brendan Goddard and Daniel Wells. Both players were ready and raring to come to the club, so they certainly would have made a great difference to that time.
Right.
But as Macca said, when you finish down the bottom and you don't get those good players, it was always going to be a tough go. And even it went into even to the next year. We still didn't get. We weren't allowed to have. I think we were allowed to have one early pick, and that was it. So, we finished down the bottom again, and we still couldn't have that priority pick. So, yeah, it's been a long grind.
Sounds like a tough hole to climb out of.
Absolutely.
I think it took the club 10 years to climb out of it.
Wow.
And as Shane said, we've got our heads above water now, and we have for probably the last 4 or 5 years, but it certainly was a fair burden initially.
Switch gears, there have been a lot of highlights, a lot of good times. What would you guys say of everything you've experienced at the club, whether you were playing, whether you're coaching, whatever the case may be, watching, what would you define as the highlight or just a good memory?
Easy for me, Shane. I'll go first because it's very easy. Winning the 95 Premiership obviously was fantastic. And I don't remember much of the game, but you remember what happens after and just savouring the moment after. I remember running around after the final siren as a team, and all you want to do is pull out a deck chair and just save at the moment and just soak it all up. It all went a little bit too quickly. So that was an easy one for me. And I've got other memories, obviously, of really good wins. The 99 prelim final against Essendon was a fantastic win.
Unbelievable game.
No one expected us to win. When we got to the ground, Essendon supporters were lining up outside the ticket boxes to buy grand final tickets. This is before they'd actually played the preliminary final. So.
Wow.
And all the players could see that when they were going into the change room. So we actually made mention of it in the change room. So I don't know whether it was that. I think it was a few heroic efforts by some individuals, but we managed to play well and get over the line. And I think Kevin Sheedy, the coach at Essendon at the time, still says it's his most disappointing loss of his career, of his very long career. So it was very satisfying. And, that led us into the 99 grand final. And it was funny, in the first quarter and a half, we had a lot more ball than the Kangaroos, a lot more of it, and we just couldn't score. And I remember it was always in our forward line, we just couldn't get a goal. And then, probably about five or 8 minutes before half time. I remember Corey McKernan took a mark for the Kangaroos and kicked a goal from about 57 metres out, and it just seemed to flatten us all because it was the first time they actually got their hands on the ball for a quarter and a half. And then they ran away winners after that. And we weren't expected to win, but deep inside us, we thought, you know what, if we can roll Essendon, then you know, we might be half a chance against North. And you know, it was great that no one was rating us. It took the pressure off us, and we just thought, you know what, we might get these guys, but it wasn't to be.
Mm. Oh, gosh. A lot of really great memories. I mean, you know, for Macca to be able to play, that'd be the amazing experience. Like, just to be involved certainly sort of helps a little bit, but to be out there playing would just be an amazing experience. I remember in the old days when David was coaching you know, Tuesday nights, he'd get me out there because we'd be short of numbers and I'd be able to get out and play and train. I was sort of playing in the VFA in those days, so it was just amazing to be able to play even a trial games and that with Bruce Doyle. But the 79 Premiership, you know, the first year I was here was just an incredible feeling. And I suppose you then you see people like, you know, Stephen Silvani as a little boy in the change rooms, and you've seen him sort of play his career out, and now his son's playing. You know, Stephen Kernahan, my wife still thinks I'm living off sticks, you know, as the recruiting sticks here. She thinks that's all I've, you know, kept my job for, I think. So
he's a pretty good get, Shannon.
But, yeah, look, so many great memories. And even, you know, I know times have been tough at the last few years, but there's still been some really, you know, great times in there as well. And, you know, you just get to work every day with some great people. So that really
including
makes
up. Including your daughter.
Up. Absolutely. It's always good having family around.
Yeah. Even, as you say, Shana, the last few years, and we've had some fantastic wins, the final against Richmond, which was great. Oh. Even that game over in Adelaide where we beat Port Adelaide by a point. Yeah. Right on the sign was a fantastic win. And certainly, you know, as recently as last week playing Geelong, I don't think too many people expect us to go over the line, and we put an enormous amount of pressure on Geelong and played really well, and that was a very, very satisfying win.
I don't think we've, is it 14 times they've beaten us?
Yeah, so I think the last time we beat them was in 2010 or something, so 6 years ago.
I mean, we used to probably have the wood over the Cats a bit in the early 90s and things, and that beating them in finals and
absolutely.
That, so... But
they've had their own on us the last few years.
They have.
You know, you could get away with a lot more back then, talking about all those memories, and a lot of it fans got to experience with you. Give us kind of the inside scoop of what went on behind the scenes. Maybe some funny stories that people may not know about.
Gosh. Well, I suppose back in when I first started, you know, zoning and things that were in, well, you know, there was quite a few players, if there was a split family, that all of a sudden a really good player was living with mum at another address and you end up getting into play for your club and things like that. There's a lot of, as a great recruiter at St Kilda, John Beveridge said you can't do any skullduggery anymore. So everything, and also you had, you know, pre-season you'd have 100-odd players here trying out, where now it's, you know, you've got to be on the list, you've got to be drafted and things like that, but... Oh, gosh, there's a lot of good stories. Probably the best ones you can't really sort of tell too much.
Come
but
on.
But certainly, you know, Carlton boys, I know Sunday mornings was recovery and, you know, sometimes they probably didn't get home till 5 o'clock that night from recovery.
Wow.
So they had good long Sunday recovery
and
sessions.
And not in good shape.
And not in good shape.
They needed a recovery for the recovery.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it was different, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Way different. And I think there was less, not division's not the right word, but certainly more inclusion with the fans. We used to go back to the Fenwick Hotel in the mid-90s and the Notting Hill Hotel, yep. Shane, when we used to play out at Waverley. And, you know, all the supporters would be around and having a wow of a time, and we'd have a wow of a time with them, and then we'd get, slink off into another place where it would be a bit quieter and where we'd just muck around ourselves. You know, and that our partners used to get right into it. I still remember at the clock tower, Shano, just off Lygon Street, and all the girls would be dancing on the grand piano, and someone would be trying to play the piano with music in the background, and yeah, it was good times. I think back then, as was the case in a lot of workplaces and certainly a lot of football clubs, people played hard and they played hard.
Yeah. They played hard. Yeah.
They played hard on the field and they played hard off the field. And certainly Shane would have seen that in the 80s with Sellers and Harnsey and all those boys and Jimmy and those guys. But we're a little bit the same, probably not quite as bad as those boys, but a little bit the same in the 90s. And I suppose it's slowly petered out since then with the poison of social media and phones on everyone and all that sort of thing, and all the media is just negative media about players mucking up and things like that. So they have to be very wary and on their toes that they can't be shown to be putting a foot out of line.
I feel sorry for the boys in lots of ways this day and age that, you know, the real... and I know they're full-time, so they're around each other a lot, but, you know, you really can't go out and Well, you know, even just enjoying yourself and sitting around having a few drinks and, you know, someone could snap a shot that, you know, someone's just laughing or looking at something and it can be taken the wrong way. But, gosh, if it was back in those days, some of our blokes, they would have been front page every week. But, they were an incredible bunch. And I can remember every Saturday night, you know, from 79 to 82 when I was at Carlton here, after a game, we'd always end up at a hotel called Poynton's Hotel in Carlton. And, I reckon by about 10 o'clock the boys would say to their girlfriends, well, we'll see you tomorrow. And they'd all head off to the different places and things like that. So, but look, they, as Macca said, like, you know, come Sunday morning when they had to do the recovery or whatever or train Monday, they certainly trained really hard and
put their game face on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, you hear of stories, I wasn't around then, but certainly Shano was, you know, when they were having trial games in the 80s and Wayne Johnson would be, a young kid would line up against Wayne Johnson or Harmsey or someone like that, and they get belted because the boys felt that their position was under threat and it was me or you, and it was on. And you don't see that type of scenario nowadays, one, because it's a little bit different system, but I think, they certainly played hard on the field.
What about in the locker room? Any funny stories? I mean, I'm sure you guys were picking on each other.
Oh, Peter Dean. Macca could probably tell you some good stories with Peter Dean. He was always doing some pranks.
Yeah, I remember Luke O'Sullivan knew a... he did a lot of pranks, Luke.
Yeah.
And he knew a butcher, and I don't know how he got hold of it, but he got a whole pig's head and hung it in someone's locker.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I can't remember who it was, but I think it might have been Justin Madden. And Justin opened the door and nearly had a heart attack. The dead snake came into the locker room.
Maybe it was you.
Stage.
You're the vet.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, someone bought it. I think they killed a tiger snake or a brown snake or something. And so, if you touch the teeth, it'll still kill you. So I grabbed it and threw it into the showers one time. That scared a few of the boys. But one good story I thought was, I think, 93, 94. And we had a pretty decent team, so we weren't panicking too much, but we were down at half-time against the Bulldogs, which were called Footscray back then. And we're only about 10 points down. We're playing terribly, and Bulldogs are playing really well. And back then, under the Heatley stand, we had a very, very small coach's room. And so we're all jammed in this coach's room, and Parquet came in, and for 3 minutes, I kid you not, he did not draw a breath once, and he just screamed for 3 minutes until we thought he was actually going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Literally could not get his breath. He was leaning on the door handle and just said, "Get out," with his last gasp of breath. We all walked out thinking, "Is he going to have a heart attack?" On Monday morning, Justin Madden grabbed the oxygen bottle out of the medical room with the oxygen mask, put the oxygen bottle in Parco's locker and hung the mask on the handle of his locker. And Parco saw the funny side, which is great.
We had this, back in the early days, we had a guy called Leo Brooks who was a great identity around the club, and he used to board a lot of the players, Mike Fitzpatrick and Peter Bezusto, Mark McClure, all those sort of guys, and Big Nick used to be around there a lot. And I can remember sometimes if we thought the place was a bit quiet and we needed a bit of a spark, you know, Leo all of a sudden come to train and start throwing crackers around and frighten the hell out of everyone. And then I remember one day at a game, Perse Jones wasn't playing, and we had the Prime Minister of Australia here and sitting up in the stand, and Perse thought he'd sort of liven the place up a bit and threw crackers around the Prime Minister, and all of a sudden you see these, you know, detectives or police diving over the top of the Prime Minister thinking that someone's having a shot at him.
What did the Prime Minister do?
Well, he saw the funny side, but his offsiders didn't think it was too funny, that's for sure. But, you know, they're always sort of up to playing jokes and, yeah, they were just, yeah, had a good time with each other.
Half the fun of it, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to wrap this up pretty soon. In a nutshell, how would you describe the club, you know, where it's come from? It's come a long way. And what do you think Carlton stands for now?
In one word, what summing up Carlton at the moment, at this very present time, is developing. I think with each era, because it's such a transient place, players go in and out and coaches go in and out and administration go in and out. The club's defined by the people within it, mm-hmm. and the people that are in it now are developers as far as the coaches are concerned and developing as far as the players are concerned. So I think it's a developing club. You know, when back in the 90s when I was playing, it was a different type of club. But back when, you know, Shane first came in, it was different again. So the club changes, but I think the fabric of the place doesn't when you're working within it. It probably does looking from an outsider's point of view, but the actual fabric doesn't. And so what we're doing now is developing our players into, you know, absolute professionals, building a very strong culture, which takes time and that the outside world wouldn't see, and raising the bar as far as standards is concerned. And those standards are across training, they're across presentation, they're across playing, and everything that you do to actually make yourself as good as possible, to get yourself out on the oval to play as good a football as possible. So we're a developing club at the moment, and we are developing as fast as we possibly can. We need to draft some more talented players. We've got some talented players in now, but we need to draft some more talented players in to help that development. So I think the fans and members can be optimistic about our future. And I don't think they've had that optimism over the last 10 or 12 years, but certainly they can be very optimistic about our future going forward.
Yeah, and it's definitely helped with the last few games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last few games. We need to be very careful that we don't look in isolation at a couple of games like the Port Adelaide game or the Geelong game. We want to do it over a period of time. And there are going to be highs and lows over the next couple of years. We're going to cup our wax and we're going to have some fantastic wins, but as long as we're trending upwards, we want to have continual improvement. And the tough thing about this industry is that year in, year out, each team improves. It's about improving more than the other 17 teams, because that's the only way you're going to go up the ladder. So that's what we're endeavouring to do.
I think one of the great things this year is even when we had those four losses, I don't see a lot of change even when there's been the wins. You know, I think that one of the great things Brendan's done is, you know, try to have a real even sort of attitude, the way you go about everything. So I think that's a really good sign for the place, that hopefully, you know, we might string some good wins together, but we're not getting carried away. Or I think in the past we'd have a couple of wins or a win and then we'd sort of then lose a couple that we shouldn't have and things like that. But, you know, now I see a real, you know, evenness about the way they're going. And, you know, I think what Macca said, the culture and everything, and not only on the playing side, but I think we've got some really great young people that work at the club that are really sort of, you know, helping it take us to the next level, you know, in their areas as well.
Yeah, and you can see the team really, they really seem to rally around Bolts, and I think that he's really kind of helped the culture of the club from what I understand from what it was to what it's been this season. It's just they seem to have a pep in their step around the club.
I think they believe in the system, yep. Shane. And I think that's part. If you believe in what you're doing, then you can give maximum effort while doing it. And that's been noticeable this year, certainly. And I felt that, you know, everyone in the place, not just the football department, everyone in the place is on the same wavelength.
Yep.
And
absolutely
unified and really in it up to the neck, trying to improve everything about the place, and really defining this sense of belonging that we're trying to do with not only within the internal walls here, but certainly the external walls, get members and supporters on board and make them feel as though they really belong to this club, and bring that feeling back, which I think has been lost over the last number of years, which it does. It's easy to lose when you're not winning. And so we're trying to create that a really strong sense of belonging between all the fans and the fans and us. And I think we're slowly getting there.
And I think too, the with the staff getting into the training sessions on Mondays and that, so they buy in a little bit more to what everyone's trying to do, and the players then understand what they're doing in their part of the club. And so many players have just even popped up the membership and got on the phones without even asking. And there's a lot of really good things happening around the place.
I know you guys weren't here for it, but from that first team photo back in 1868,
I'm not that old. I was closer than Macca anyway.
I might have had hair, but yeah.
And then through to that first appointed coach, during all the developments, all the highs and lows the club has seen in its 152 years. Is there anything else that you guys would like to say just about the club, where it's been or where it's going?
One thing, going back to the very beginning, I think it was actually Carlton that lent Essendon the money so they could actually get the licence to get in the VFL and play.
Wow.
So that's quite phenomenal. And we've had an enormous healthy respect but rivalry with Essendon, certainly over the last 40 years, 30 years or so. And so it's quite interesting to note. Someone told me that a couple of years ago that Carlton lent them the money so they could get in. So that's pretty funny.
I wouldn't want to bring that out too often.
Right.
Essendon,
so. I wish I knew that when I was playing.
That'd be good on one of the banners if the team runs out.
That's right. But it's a very, very old historic club. You know, you think of the old clubs in the UK and you think of Manchester United. We are older than Manchester United, which is absolutely incredible.
That's impressive.
So, there's a lot of history there, a lot of success, some downtimes as well, but we're looking forward to some optimistic uptimes over the next few years.
Great future.
I think that one of the great things at the moment is that I think every Carlton supporter feels really proud again of being a navy blue and a blue bagger. So that's a really nice thing to see the supporters, feeling good again, and rather than getting a ballot over the head about how bad we're going or where's your club heading. So, I think it's great that the supporters feel that the club's on the right path and looking ahead.
Yeah, you can really feel it. It's something that
I'm
thankful to be part of. Well, thank you guys very much, Shane O'Sullivan and Andrew McKay, for helping us get a little bit more of an in-depth look at what kind of goes on behind the scenes of Carlton and maybe some things that the fans and members may not know. I know I sure learned a lot, and hopefully a few people out there did as well. And thanks to you guys for listening to Round 2 of Brownlow's Blues, this crazy American's take on an incredible sport with a fitting middle name.
Is that really your middle name?
It really is. Actually, it's funny. I used to be, as a kid, kind of embarrassed of it. I don't know why, but it's an English. My dad grew up in England, and it's his family's last name. And then ever since I got to Australia and started working for for AFL, I'm a legend here. So
yeah,
I'm really embracing the middle name now. If any of you guys out there have an idea for an episode, if there's anything that you'd like to know about what goes on behind the scenes, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to shoot me an email. It's haley.winslow@carltonfc.com.au. So it's haileywinslow@carltonfc.com.au. Thanks for making me feel welcome. Go Navy Blues! And thanks to you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Haley.
Live from Icon Park, I'm Haley Brownlow Winslow with Shane O'Sullivan and Andrew McKay. And this is Brownlow's